It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Deborah Amos. We've been spending much of this week tracking efforts to fix the economy. This morning, we're going to try to gauge what will work. The markets have been giving mixed signals. Stocks rebounded, then they dropped again. Oil prices fell, and then they inched up again. NPR's economics correspondent Adam Davidson has been following these developments, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Deb.
Adam, we've had lots of confusing and dramatic weeks lately. How does this one compare?
Well, I'd say the stock market going up and then going down dramatically, the oil prices going down and then inching up a little bit, that's the kind of noise that the average person should feel free to just go ahead and ignore. Economists call that noise, literally. It doesn't have a clear narrative. It doesn't have a clear message until you've seen many months of this sort of thing. So I'd say that is not something to pay attention to. But this housing bill that the House just passed and the Senate is expected to pass tomorrow, that is big. That is, I think, the biggest piece of legislation yet out of this crisis. It's probably the single biggest piece of legislation dealing with housing in America in decades. It's a big, big deal. And this week will be remembered as the week that the housing market in the U.S. changed dramatically.
Adam, you talked to a lot of economists in your reporting. What are they saying about this bill?
Well, one thing is easy to say. Every economist hates this bill. There is something for everyone to hate. And I've been fascinated to read how left-wing and right-wing and centrist and Democrats and Republicans, every economist hates this bill. But, and this is a big but, many say it is necessary anyway. I think it's likened to your kid comes home at midnight saying, hey, I borrowed some money from a loan shark and he's about to break my legs or kill me. Can I borrow $10,000? No one likes that situation, but most parents would give the $10,000 to save their kid. But then they would say, hey, we are going to talk about this in the morning. And I think that's a way to think about this bill. The risk of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac collapsing, the risk of even worse collapse of the U.S. housing market, that is devastating. It's hard to overestimate just how violent that would be to the U.S. and world economies. But it's the let's talk about it in the morning part that economists are worried about. There's a lot of feeling that the Congress and the administration and the Federal Reserve are not saying enough about how we're going to have to revisit all of this. We're going to have to punish the people or make the people who took big risks bear the outcome of the risks they took. And that's where economists are very upset about this bill.
Well, the president is expected to sign it. And does this mean that the biggest problem is over? Is the economy fixed now?
Definitely not. I think that's a safe bet. This eliminates the crisis of the month, the crisis of the last few weeks that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, these massive institutions that undergird much of the U.S. economy, will not go under. But, you know, a few months ago, we had no thought that they would go under. So we're really back to where we were, you know, in early June or whatever it might be, meaning that there is the greatest challenge to the fundamental architecture of the global financial system that we've seen since, I don't know, the 70s, World War II, the Great Depression, no way to know for sure, but it sure seems like there's a lot more to play out, a lot more surprises, likely many more banks, hopefully smaller ones, will collapse. There's a lot more left in this crisis.
So if this is a short-term fix, what are the long-term problems?
The long-term problems are that if there isn't that talk in the morning coming, that people, investors, shareholders, investment company and mortgage company managers have been told, take big risks, you get the upside, the taxpayer will take care of the downside, and that will make our whole economy more risky, and taxpayers on the hook for that. That's the long-term risk here.
Thank you very much. NPR's Adam Davidson. Wall Street had some good days this week, especially bank stocks. But by week's end, a dismal report on the home market sent stock prices down again. To find out how banks are doing and how the overall economy is faring, we called David Wessel. He's economics editor of the Wall Street Journal. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with banks, the companies that are the backbone of the financial system. What are the measures to say that they're looking healthier?
Well, the banks have been reporting that they made a lot of loans that aren't worth the money they lent and taking write-offs. So I think the two most important measures are, can they raise capital? Are people investing money in banks? And secondly, are they expanding their lending so the rest of the economy can keep going?
And are they doing those things?
Well, some banks have raised a lot of capital, and some of the stronger banks are lending at a pretty good clip. But a lot of the banks are not, and we don't really know whether more of the banks will tell us that they have problems that they haven't disclosed and will things get worse, or is the worst behind us?
Are we focusing too much on the sectors that are in trouble? Is there a larger picture that we should be looking at?
Well, there's always a glass half full, half empty problem when you look at the economy. But one of the striking things at the moment is that we are told that we've had the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. Yet the government's going to report next week, almost certainly, that the economy kept growing through the second quarter. So I think there is some strength in the economy. Exports have been very strong. Business financing outside of the auto industry and outside of the financial sector is in pretty good shape. And consumers say they're really bummed out. Consumer confidence surveys are very depressing numbers. But except for cars and boats and other really big ticket items, consumer spending has held up reasonably well so far.
Well, one thing that's making people happy is that oil prices are going down, and we've been reporting on that all week. But is that a trend?
We sure hope so, because what happened here is that house prices fell, so people were really stretched. The government passed a stimulus bill that gave people a little bit of money, and then the oil producers took it all away. And so families are definitely being squeezed. They're not getting wage increases. There's more unemployment. And then a lot of the money that people do have is going to food and energy prices. So a major concern of people who worry about the economy is, will this oil price decline that we've seen the last couple of days continue? Because if it doesn't, that's really bad news.
And is it connected to the bigger economic picture?
Yes. If the global economy slows down, demand for oil should come down, and with it should come down the price of oil. So that's what the optimists have been hoping will happen. It's just until recently, it didn't look like it was happening.
Let's talk about the really big news this week, and that is the mortgage rescue bill. Does this change the economic landscape in the country?
It doesn't change the economic landscape. It applies a couple more Band-Aids to the problem, helping some people who have mortgages that are worth more than their values of the house get out of them, providing some money to state and local governments to buy foreclosed houses. And it prevents the collapse of these big mortgage giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
But that's short term.
That's short term.
So there's still some long term things that we really don't know.
Sure. Housing prices are still coming down. If housing prices go down another 10 or 20%, well, Freddie and Fannie are fully invested in mortgages. They're going to have a hard time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's David Wessel. He's the economics editor of The Wall Street Journal. NPR's business news starts with a car maker who's still cruising. And it's Honda, which reported a surprise increase in profits. The 8% jump comes despite higher material costs and a stronger yen, which makes Japanese exports more expensive. U.S. automakers are closing plants and report losses. Honda's North American factories are still operating near full capacity. The company's been able to scale back more easily on its SUV and truck production and boost production of its more fuel-efficient Civics and Accords.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. There's no shortage of alarming news coming out of the U.S. auto industry these days. Today, another sign of decline. Ford posted an $8.7 billion loss for the second quarter. Now, that huge number can be misleading. Most of that $8.7 billion came from one-time charges. But the loss on everyday operations was still more than $1 billion.
Ford's main problems are the rising cost of gas and falling demand for trucks and SUVs. And so, like other automakers, the company now says it'll focus on making smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. From Michigan Radio, Dustin Dwyer reports.
In the U.S., Ford is largely a truck company. Its F-Series pickup has been the best-selling vehicle in the nation for three decades. But in Europe, Ford has a lineup of small cars that would surprise most Americans. It's a lineup that's ideally suited for where the U.S. market seems to be headed. This morning, Ford CEO Alan Mulally said six of those small European Ford models will be sold in the U.S. starting in 2010.
With the environment changing and the fuel prices moving up, and the customer demand switching to the smaller vehicles, this is a strategic decision that we're making, that we want to serve all those customers in the United States with a full product line.
And to get that full product line, Ford plans major changes to its manufacturing operations in the U.S. Those changes will take place here, where I'm standing, at the Michigan Truck Plant in Wayne, Michigan, just outside of Dearborn. This plant has been building trucks since 1964, but as I look out over the parking lot here right now, it's basically empty. Ford stopped production here a month ago because this plant builds big SUVs, and people aren't buying big SUVs right now. So the plan is to take this plant and switch it over and make small cars here instead. Ford also plans to do that at two other truck plants in North America. But there is one factor that could complicate Ford's plan.
We really don't know what the price of fuel could be in a year.
This is David Cole of the Center for Automotive Research.
It could be $5 a gallon. It could be $2 a gallon. And so one of the business imperatives for companies like Ford or the other auto manufacturers is to do everything possible to become more flexible and agile.
But flexible is a relative term in the auto industry. Developing a new vehicle from the bottom up can take 3 years. Cole says reconfiguring plants is also a lengthy and complicated process. Even if Ford moves quickly, it will take more than a year to convert its truck plants so they can make cars.
And in part, it's not governed by how fast you can get people in the plant and move stuff around. You've got to depend on tooling. You've got to depend on manufacturing equipment that might have to be ordered, and you may have to wait in line with other people that are trying to order the same kind of thing. It's a huge challenge.
In addition to reconfiguring truck plants, Ford plans to boost production at plants that are already making popular vehicles. For example, the company will double the number of hybrids it builds next year. But all of those changes mean Ford will be in restructuring mode for some time to come. Ford CEO Alan Mulally had once hoped to return the company to profitability by 2009. Now he says that we'll have to wait until at least 2010. For NPR News, I'm Dustin Dwyer in Ann Arbor, Michigan.